The last converter that I want to present together the other that we have seen in the last lesson is the so-called Sigma Delta converter. That is a particular kind of device developed at the beginning, I'm talking about 80s, for audio transmission of the voice signals. Successively, its use was extended to very high accurate signal processing since it can provide up to 24 but even 36 bit precision. The idea was born in the first year of the development of the so-called pulse code modulation. Their use begins only with the 70s, but let's say the definitive usage and that becomes popular in electronic applications is around the 80s. The Sigma Delta converter is based on four pillars, we could say, called delta modulation, noise shaping, oversampling, and decimation. That is, it's made by four stages, each one implementing one of the functions that have been cited, and we will see them on a step-by-step basis. Also, of course, the overall converter implements the union of them. I have put on the slide 34 a web reference for those who want to go more into the details about the characteristics and the applications into which such a kind of devices can be employed. The first concept is related to the delta modulation, we said, and differential pulse code modulation. In the slide 35, I have presented both the concepts. Also, we only consider one of them in the following explanation, because we can consider them quite similar, in fact. Looking at the first one, the delta modulation that is reported into the upper part of the slide, we see that we try to track the analog signal that must be converted and is presented in input to the device by means of a suitable 1-bit digital to analog converter. That is, such a kind of bit proposes in output a value. Remember that a 1-bit DAC is basically a switch that sweeps between a maximum or a minimum value. Typically, they are the maximum reference value of the converter and the minimum one, perhaps plus 5 volts and minus 5 volts. The idea is that a comparison is made between the analog voltage that must be converted in input and the integration function, the result of the integration function of the output of this 1-bit DAC. The difference between the analog input signal and the tracking signal is used to drive an operational amplifier that works on a threshold basis as a comparator. That is, the output of that block called sigma that basically performs the difference between the two input values is compared with the ground, and depending if it is greater or lower, the output of the comparator will be 1 or 0, that is, will be a digital value that will be converted by the DAC into a plus 5 or minus 5 contribute, therefore accumulated by the integral in the result that is compared to the analog input. A couple of comments. The output of such a kind of stage is a sequence of digital values. In particular, is a sequence of ones or zeros. This is a new concept, if you want, for the idea that we have of analog to digital converters, because typically we thought them as devices provided in output n parallel bits, or the binary conversion of the input voltage. In this case, we will have a serial sequence of bits that will be sent to the microprocessor and will be acquired, but in particular will be successively elaborated just to reconstruct the binary number that corresponds to the input. The second comment, the second idea or remark that comes from this presentation is shown in the picture in the left part of the slide. If we consider as the input signal proposed to the converter that red curve, we see that the output of the converter is a sequence of ones and zero, but what it is presented to the sigma block, just to be compared with the analog input, is a let's say discretized signal made by ones and zeros that are cumulated, and in other words correspond to tracking signal that tries to follow the red curve, the input signal, as close as possible and as accurate as possible. Clearly, we have a quantization effect due to the amplitude of the pulses of the bits that the ADC exploits. And in turn, this is due to the solution that we have considered of including a DAC, in this case, 1-bit converter into the conversion ring. But the idea is to try to follow as fast as possible, not only as accurate as possible, the evolution, the behavior of the input signal. Clearly, this is possible up to a certain limit, and the lower figure that is shown in the slide shows the possibility that the input signal changes with a velocity, better with a slew rate, that is with a ratio between the variation in the amplitude of the signal with respect to time, that the converter is not able to follow perfectly, if not after a certain time. Clearly you see in the figure that the red curve augments with a velocity that is quite high, and conversely the capability of the signal of the converter of augmenting the value of the integration is relative to the 1-bit step that it features, and in the figure the, let's say, slowness with which the tracking capability of the ADC is performed, is made, emerges. At the end, that is when the slope of the input signal becomes less big, the converter will succeed in docking, let's say, the value of the input signal itself, and again it will follow correctly the behavior of the input signal. But to be honest, in the phase that is shown in the figure, that is in the central phase of the first part, into which the distance between the red curve and the increment one bit step of the black curve, that is of the ADC converted output, is large. Okay, in that phase, the accuracy of the converter is not, of course, satisfying, is not enough. This is the concept, the basic concept. The real devices will implement not a one-bit conversion, but a nth-bit conversion. That is, instead of using a one-bit DAC, the approximation ring will include a n-bit DAC. And instead of using a comparator with one threshold that is compared with the difference between the analog input and the converted one, between the signals that provide an error, a n-bit flash ADC, that is a very quick, very fast device for the conversion, is included. We could say that such a kind of device is a converter made by converters, made by other converters, but clearly this is done for obtaining a higher level of accuracy. But what it is very innovative in the converter is the idea, let's say the principle on which it is based, that is to construct converted signal that tries to approximate as best as possible the input value that is proposed to the converter itself. This extended, we could say, architecture is shown in the other picture, in the right part of the slide 35. This is called differential pulse code modulation. For sake of simplicity, we will remain in the following explanation on the first example, but consider that it is not complicated, and it is quite straightforward to pass from the description that we give now to the extended n-bit architecture. So let's go to slide 36. Into which we see how this concept evolves in the sigma delta modulation stage. We recognize most of the things that we have seen in the previous slide. We have a comparison node called again sigma. We have an integration stage, we have a comparator, and we have a one-bit DAC that, as we anticipated in the previous description, is basically made by a switch between two constant and fixed values, a plus voltage, let's say, and a minus fixed voltage. What we are considering is the block with the red dotted lines. After this, we have a digital filter and a decimation that are mandatory in this kind of converter to improve the quality of the conversion, but we will describe it later. The concept is very similar to what we have seen a few minutes before. The only difference in this case is in the location of the integrator or if you want, in the role played by this function. If before the integrator was located after the 1-bit DEC, in this case it is located after the sigma block. That is, instead of integrating the 1-bit output, instead of accumulating the 1-bit output that was VREF or minus VREF, in this case the integrator block will accumulate the error between the input voltage and the output of the 1-bit. That is, this output, this integration function, is sent to the comparator input and compared, as before, with a threshold, in this case the threshold is the ground, and the output of this comparator will be the command that will cause the switching of the 1-bit DEC from plus the reference voltage to the minus 1 or vice versa. However, the 1-bit output of the comparator will be sent to the digital filtering unit and to the decimation stage that we will see in a minute. In other words, the DEC output is compared with the input 1, and the error is averaged by the integrator so as to regulate the pulse emission. There is another issue that is important to take into account in this architecture, that is the presence of a clock point, a clock input point, called KFS, that represents the way we have to sample the output of the latched comparator. We will see that depending on the amount of the value K, it is possible to considerably improve the accuracy of the overall conversion itself. K is an integer multiple factor of FS that represents the frequency of the input signal Vin. Let's consider how this stage works. And in the slide 37, a couple of examples are presented. I prefer, between these two examples, to concentrate our attention on the second one, to which the input signal is, let's say, half the maximum possible voltage that is allowed in this conversion. VREF divided by 2 is only the case to mention that VREF is typically the power supply voltage of the converter itself, that could be plus 5 or minus 5, or in some versions of these converters plus 10 volts. In any case, we are setting the input of the converter to half of the possible range, and specifically we suppose that it is equal to 2 volts, while the input signal will be set to 1 volt. As we said, VREF divided by 2. In the lower part of the slide, the output values of the blocks called sigma, A, comparator, and B are shown, and a corresponding picture that shows the evolution, the behavior of the two signals A and B is presented. Consider that the starting point of the picture is highlighted by a red arrow, and the corresponding set of the values of the blocks on which the converter is based are depicted in red in the sequence of the numbers that are presented in the slide. In that moment, the value of B, that is the output of the 1-bit DAC, is set at the maximum possible value, pur F, that is plus 2 volts. And this value is subtracted from the input V in, that is 1 volt, so as to have that the output of the sigma block is minus 1. Since we are considering that we are at the beginning of the conversion, the present value of the integrator of the accumulation, let's say, value is 0. Therefore, the integration function basically adds the output of the sigma block to the accumulation, and the output A of this stage is again minus 1. Minus 1 will be compared by the comparator to the threshold, that is the ground, and the output will be a logic 0 that will cause the switch of the 1-bit DAC from plus 2 volts to minus 2 volts, from high level to low level. Minus 2 will be presented to the input block, input node, with the VIN signal. Therefore, we will add plus 2 to 1 volt, and we will have 3 volts as the output of the sigma block. These 3 volts will be presented at the input of the comparator, and since the ground is 0, the output of the comparator will be a logic 1. Therefore, B will be set to the maximum VREF value, plus 2. Plus 2 will be subtracted from the input, so the output of the sigma block will be minus 1. Minus 1 will be integrated, that is, accumulated to the previous value of the integrator, that was 2. Therefore, the new result is 1. 1 is greater than 0, therefore the output of the comparator is high, and this high pulse will keep, will maintain the output of the 1-bit DAC to 2 volts. This value will be subtracted again from the input, so the output of the sig block will be minus 1 again. Minus 1 added to the integration function will turn out in a zero value. That compared with the ground will keep the output of the comparator at 1. This means that the output of the 1-bit DAC remains at plus 2. So the output of the block sigma in the next step will be again minus 1. A, the output of the accumulation stage, will turn out in minus 1. Minus 1 is lower than the threshold, so as the comparator output is 0. This drives the output of the 1-bit DAC to minus 2. Minus 2 will be added to the input, so as to have 3 as the sigma block output. 3 will cause the value of the accumulator stage to become plus 2. Plus 2 sets the output of the comparator to 1. This will make the switch to go at plus 2 volt. Plus 2 volt is corresponding to a value that is subtracted from the input. Therefore, the input 1 minus 2 will give a minus 1 output of the sigma block. And this minus 1 is the reason why the output of the integration function will be 1. One compared with the ground will set the comparator output at 1. This will bring the output of the B block, the 1-bit DAC block, to plus 2 volts. Plus 2 volts will cause the output of sigma to be set at minus 1. Minus 1 added to the previous value of the accumulator will set the output of the integration block at 0. This will keep the output of the comparator to 1 and will keep the output of the 1-bit DAC at plus 2. From this point, the sequence of the values reproduces basically all the previous values that each block has, and we can clearly see a repetition in the group of the values that each block exploits. In particular, every four values basically the sequence replies itself. That is, there is no need to continue in the analysis because the values are always the same. The figure reproduces well the behavior of these values because if you look at the evolution of the signal A, you see that starting from the lowest value it can have, that is minus 1, then we have 0, then we have plus 2, then we have 1, then we have 0, then minus 1, and again we repeat the sequence. Graphically, we can appreciate better the periodicity of the sequence of the values. And correspondingly, the sequence of the digital outputs of the B signal, the output of the 1-bit DAC, is the same periodic 0, 1, 1, 1, and again 0, 1, 1, 1, and more and more. We have seen in the previous architecture an input block that allows us to sample all these signals. In particular, what is interesting for us is the output of the comparator, because that is the real output of the converter. We can decide to sample the signal so as to collect four samples, and in this case if we perform a summation of the logic ones and the logic zeros that we are considering, we will obtain three, because in the period that we are considering we have that B is 0 one time, and then 1, 1, 1, that is 1 3 times. The sum is 3. The maximum value is 4, so the output is 3 on 4. And if you consider this output, you will see and you will agree that is perfectly corresponding to the ratio between the input voltage and the possible range that we are considering, that is from a minimum value into which the input signal is accepted as minus 2 volts, up to a maximum value into which the input signal is accepted, that is plus 2 volts. Minus 1 represents a level that corresponds to the 75% of the possible range of values that we have at our disposal, and clearly the conversion that we obtained with such a mechanism, 3 on 4, gives the same value, the same result. We can decide to sample 4 values or 8 values, the result is the same, because if we consider 8 values in output, we will obtain that every 4 of them, 3 are high and 1 is 0, therefore the sum in that case will be 6, and 6 divided by 8 is as 3 divided by 4. The only thing that changes is that the output of the converter will be expressed with more bits, that is, with a wider range of values, and in this sense it could be considered more accurate. The second example that is shown in the slide 37 features the case into which the input signal is equal to 0. The logic, of course, is the same, but clearly what happens is that the 1-bit DAC output continues to oscillate between plus VREF and minus VREF. In fact, if we consider that the input signal is 0, considering the possibility that, for example, B is equal to plus 2, 0 minus 2 at the sigma block will give minus 2 at the input of the integrator function, that is minus 2 in the comparator input, and the output of the comparator will be 0. Therefore, the 1-bit will switch to minus VREF, that is minus 2 in output. The output of the sigma block will be, in that case, plus 2. Plus 2 in the integration function added to the previous value will provide 0 in output. The output of the comparator will be 1, and 1 will drive the output of the 1-bit DAC to plus 2. Plus 2 will be subtracted with respect to the input, that is 0, and this value will be added to the accumulator integration block, so the output will be minus 2. Minus 2 will drive the comparator output to 0, and again, once more, the output of the 1-bit DAC will be set to minus 2, that will be brought to the input of the sigma block as plus 2, and the sequence will reply itself indefinitely, because the behavior of such a signal is basically an oscillation. This is well shown in the picture in the upper part of the slide 37. You see that the value of A is a triangular wave oscillating with respect to a constant value, and the output of the B signal will be a sequence of pulses alternatively equal to 1 and to 0. Therefore, if we consider 4 samples, for example, we will have that the output will be 2 on 4. And if we will consider 8 samples, the output will be 4 on 8. That is half the possible range of values in output that can be assumed by the input signal, or, if we want, that can be assumed by the binary converted numbers. And since 0 is exactly the half of the possible input values that can be considered between minus 2 volts and plus 2 volts, the conversion also in this case well represents the evolution of the signal, but clearly in a digital converted number. The next slide, 38, shows a very important concept that is introduced this in this converter together with the previous loop that tracks the input signal. This concept is the so-called oversampling. Oversampling means that we sample at a frequency that is very higher with respect to the one of the signal that must be converted, but higher also with respect to what the Nyquist theorem could say to us. And this is done basically to improve the reaction to the noise of the overall converter. In fact, if we consider the quantization error in a typical analog to digital converter, we know that is the ratio between the reference voltage and 2 power n, where n is the number of the bits. The root mean square of the quantization error in a sampled and converted signal is instead the ratio of this value divided by 12 under square root. This is a value that is very easy to be obtained. We don't demonstrate the mathematical calculation that allows us to obtain it, but let's assume that this is the root mean square, that is the average error of the converter. And consider that this error is white, that is uniformly distributed between 0 and FS, the two extremities of the possible ranges of harmonics function that characterize the input signal that we are supposing to have. A second consideration, if we sample this signal at a very high frequency, higher, of course, than the maximum it can have, KFS, where K is an integer positive greater than 1. The quantization error remain similar, but it will be distributed on a wider range of frequencies. Now, if we apply a low-pass filtering, the filter will remove the noise, and this will improve the so-called effective number of bits, as you remember from the description that we gave in the last week. K is the so-called oversampling factor. This situation is well represented in the figure in the slide 38 by the three steps A, B, and C. Also, the C step has not been explained till now. A is the distribution of the quantization error, as we have defined before, in the range of frequencies of the signal. And you see that is uniform. The range of the frequencies is considered from 0 to FS half, because in this graph we are supposing that we could have also negative frequencies, but this will bring us very far from the concept that we want to describe, and it's related to the communication theory. Let's accept it. The second graph in the B figure shows that the presence of the oversampling distributes the quantization error on a larger set of frequencies, on a larger range of frequencies, but you clearly understand the reason why this happens. It is the so-called conservation of the product gain time bandwidth. This is a well-known theorem, a well-known concept in the communication theory that says that the amplitude of a signal is reduced, that is the force, the effect of a signal is reduced, if you apply it on a wide range of frequencies. if you consider it in the range of a frequency that is very large with respect its original one. Instead, if you consider the typical range of frequencies 0 fs, the amplitude, the force, the strength of the signal will be augmented, is, let's say, greater. And this is due to the fact that the product gain bandwidth is the area that is shown by that graph. And since the area represents more or less the energy of the system, the energy of the signal, that is always the same, it is clear that if we want to, let's say, operate on a set of possible velocities, frequencies, that is very large, we will lose part of our effect, power, part of our force. Instead, if we concentrate our action on a reduced set of frequencies, our, let's say, capability of causing, of providing a certain degree of effect is more effective, is greater. And this is shown by the graph, because in the graph you see the superposition of two figures. The first shows a high gain and a small set of frequencies. The second shows a lower gain, a lower amplitude, and a larger set of possible frequencies. This is, however, true both for the signal but also for the noise. So if we oversample, we distribute the noise on a larger set of frequencies, and clearly if we apply a low-pass filter to this noise with a cutoff frequency set between fs half and kfs half, it is true. We will throw out most of the noise that affects the signal itself. This is shown in the C part of the picture of the graph, where a particular effect typical of a sigma delta converter is presented. In fact, in this case, the presence of an internal component that plays the role of a low-pass filter causes a reshaping of the noise. This effect is called noise shaping, indeed, that will be mostly concentrated at very high frequencies. This aspect improves further the signal-to-noise ratio, since the big part of the noise will be pushed at the higher frequencies and therefore will be removed by a suitable filter. In slide 39 we have the demonstration of such a kind of effect and also of the filtering. Consider that we have a stage that performs an integration in the conversion chain. Therefore, the low-pass filter is represented by the block whose output is A. In the picture in slide 39, we have a model of this, very elementary, but with all the elements that we have in the sigma-delta converter. That is, input X, a feedback signal Y, a block sigma that performs the subtraction, the comparison, x minus y. This value is sent in input to a low-pass filter with transfer function 1 on f, that is an integrator block. The output of this is characterized by a quantization noise due to the characteristics of the converter itself. And this is the model, and this is the nature of the sigma-delta converter. So we are representing what we are talking about since 40 minutes. What is the transfer function of this ring? Y, the output, is equal to 1 on f, x minus y, plus q. Very simple steps. K can rearrange this equation, giving that y is equal to x divided by f plus 1 plus qf divided f plus 1. The first is the part of the output that is made of the input signal, and the second is the part of the output that is made of the noise. Clearly, if f goes to zero, the output will be mainly given by the input signal. Instead, if the f tends to infinite, the output will be mainly given by the noise, the quantization noise. The filter effect is low-pass type on the signal and therefore high-pass type on the noise. And if we come back to the graph shown in slide 38, we clearly see that with such a kind of low-pass filter, the noise will be not equally distributed at all the frequencies, but will be mostly concentrated in the higher part of the frequency range that we are considering. Indeed, due to such a kind of transfer function shown in slide 39. Therefore, we will have the possibility of removing more and more the noise that we would have in the case that the converter is without the low-pass filter, that is the integration block. The noise shaping is that phenomenon that causes the concentration of the noise at higher frequency, and clearly by inserting a suitable low-pass filter we cut the majority of it. Finally, since the bandwidth is reduced to the filtering, the output is allowed to be at a minor frequency than the original one, that was KFS. But, of course, must still respect the Shannon theorem, that is, it must be greater than 2FS. This can be obtained by providing in output only the nth term while discarding the others. This is called decimation because basically we decide to take one term every m, respecting both the Shannon theorem and taking a frequency that is lower than KFS, just to cut the noise at high frequencies. Moreover, this is a further benefit for us because the number of the samples that we must have in output, that is the elaboration rate of the microprocessor that acquires the samples, will be reduced, and it allows to it to make also other elaborations and to attend at other duties and tasks. What happens if we consider higher order sigma delta modulators, that is, if we include more integration blocks in the overall architecture of the converter? The slide number 30 tries to answer to this question. We have a couple of pictures. The first one in the left upper part of the slide shows what happens in terms of noise reaction if we augment the number of the sigma delta modulators. You clearly see that the noise shaping effect will be increased, so more noise will be confined in the high frequency area. Therefore, the filtering made by a low pass filter will be more effective, and more noise will be reacted. In the lower right part of the slide, instead, we have an example of a second order sigma delta modulator. The basic structure of the architecture is preserved. We have the same comparator, the same 1-bit DAC. What is augmented is the number of the integrator stages that are considered. That is, the output of the DAC is given to a first comparison node with the input voltage. Then we have an integrator stage. Then we have another comparison node into which the output of the first integrator is compared by subtraction with the output of the 1-bit DAC. That is a further filtering, averaging level is added to the error before to put it in input to the second integrator block that joins to the remaining part of the ring architecture that is equal as before. We still have the digital output filtering for noise reaction and the decimator. So the higher the number of the integrator blocks, the higher can be considered the order of the sigma delta modulator, and the higher will be the noise reaction. Consider, however, that we have a limit to this evolution of the modulator, since every integrator block we have, a further delay in the conversion will be introduced. So we can improve considerably the accuracy of the ADC of the converter, diminishing the effect of the quantization error, but the price is a slower conversion. So clearly there is a trade-off between the order numbers that we can conceive and the time necessary for the conversion with respect to the overall real-time constraints that we can have in the acquisition and in the elaboration of the signal that we are converting. The final slide about this topic shows different project options that we can choose in terms of oversampling ratio with respect to the original frequency of the signal that we are converting. In other words, we can decide if the factor by which we increase, we augment the sampling frequency, 4, 8, 16, 32, as shown in the picture, will correspond to an improvement in the signal-to-noise ratio. For example, if we consider oversampling factor equal to 64, we have three graphs in the picture, in the diagram. The first shows the curve, the ratio between K and the signal-to-noise ratio for a first-order loop, the middle one for a second order loop converter, and the last one, the upper one, for a third order converter. In the case of a second order loop, this diagram shows that the ratio can be for k equal to 64 in the order of 80 dB. And if we recover that formula we have seen in the past when we estimated the effect of the noise onto the signal to noise ratio, and we estimated the number of effective bits that the SNR ratio provides, we will obtain that the effective number of bits in that case is close to 13, that is a very good precision provided by the converter. The next and the final part of this section and of the course concerns those problems that characterize the acquisition and the activity of the microprocessor. So we have described the features of the acquisition chain in terms of those issues that affect the software that must be executed onto the microprocessor. I remember, for example, the control commands that must be sent from the micro towards the components of which the chain is made of, the accuracies, the accuracy issues that are related to the technologies on which the ADC converters are based. And now we see how the activity of the microprocessor can be subdivided or better conceived in three levels. All these issues can be considered as falling under the name of industrial informatics. First of all, we will see and we have to manage a suitable acquisition level. That is, the microprocessor should take care of all those interfaces and their relative control commands to activate in the correct way and at the correct time the electronic devices of which the acquisition chain is made of. Second, after the acquisition has been done, we have a binary number that must be converted into something. What something? Into the measurement that it represents. Consider that, as we have several times said, the binary number that we are reading in the port of the microprocessor is the conversion of a voltage who in turn represents the physical magnitude the transducers or the single transducer acquired. Now we have to transform this value in a physical magnitude, in a value that represents a physical magnitude. And finally, when we have acquired a single value or a set of values, the microprocessor typically, not always in the embedded microprocessors, but typically, should elaborate properly those values. For example, performing a suitable statistic set of elaborations on them, or a fast Fourier transform, or, as we well know, applying one of the popular and typical deep learning algorithms that recently have been conceived. So, let's consider the first step, acquisition. Acquisition means that the microprocessor reads the input port and obtain a data binary representation of a voltage that typically is coded as a fixed point value, sometimes as a floating point value, but this is quite rare, on 1632 bits. But one typical problem that can arise is that the ADC features a number of bits that is less than those used by the microprocessor. That is, the data bus of the microprocessor is, for example, 32 bits, and the ADC converter is 24 bits. Or, the data bus of the micro is 16 bits wide, and the ADC length is 12 bits. In both the cases, a couple of problems must be taken into account. That is, the sine propagation and the alignment. Both the approaches try to solve the problem, what is the value of the remaining bits, but both the approaches feature benefits and drawbacks. Let's see them in the slide 43. If we say sine propagation, we mean that those bits that must be added will reproduce the value of the most significant bit of the converter. Instead, if we talk about sine propagation, we mean that the most significant bit of the converter will become the most significant bit of the data bus. An example shown in slide 43 probably clarifies such a kind of concept. Let's consider a very easy, a very elementary example like that proposed by a 2-bit converter and a 4-bit data bus. If we have to propagate or align 00, 01, 10, and 11, what does this mean? What does this mean? If we propagate the sign, 00 will be converted in 0000. And the same can be said for the alignment. But you see just now what is the difference. In the first case, the magenta bits represent the added bits whose value is the same as the most significant bit of the ADC. In the second case, the green bits represent the added bits, and we see that the bits of the ADC are the most significant bits of the data bus. That is, the other one will be 00, or sometimes will reproduce the value of the least significant bit. It depends, it's a convention. Following the same idea, 01 will be converted into 0001 in one case and 0100 in the second case. Third, 10 will be 1110 and 1000 in the two modes. And finally, 11 is converted into 1111 or 1100 if we align the bits. What does it mean in terms of numeric values? If we consider the alignment, we can say that more or less the relationship between the values is preserved. That is, numerically speaking, in terms of decimal values, we have 0, 1, 2, and 3. The alignment will give us 0, 4, 8, and 12. You see that the amplitude of the interval between the values is basically the same. Equal intervals separate the ADC output values. Of course, a suitable rescaling will be necessary in the software that is running on the microprocessor to preserve the real values and the real physical magnitude that correspond to those values. Instead, if we consider the propagation approach, we see that the values provided by the ADC will be concentrated at the extremes of the range. In other words, the accuracy is preserved as it is. 0 remains 0 and 1 remains 1. 1-1 remains the last and highest value that even in the new data width is given, that is 1-1-1-1. And 1-0 will remain the value immediately before. But all the central area between these two, let's say, extremities groups is in some sense lost. This is a consideration that can be done without considering the sign of the values. Instead, if we consider the sign of these magnitudes, we see that in case of propagation, we preserve sign and value. In case instead of alignment, we preserve the sign, but the value is clearly different.
So we see how the situation changes considering propagation or alignment, but considering also if we are interested to preserve the sign or not. And clearly, this is not a set of positive or negative remarks. Simply, we have presented considerations that must be kept into the account when the engineer writes the code that will elaborate those values. Of course, we can also consider the possibility of a direct
alignment
without preserving the sign. That is, you see, all the most significant bits are kept at zero, but in this case, okay, this is a choice. We don't consider the value that arrives from the converter as a signed value. Always referring to the acquisition chain that we have described, we can ask to ourselves what is the role of the microprocessor in terms of temporization. Or in other words, what are the tasks that the microprocessor must execute when managing the signals and when controlling the devices that characterize the acquisition chain. We can identify basically three operations that can be executed in this overall management of the acquisition. The first is a continuous cycle that sets in practice the sampling frequency. In other words, we well remember that both a single transducer whose output is sent to the microprocessor or a set of the outputs of possible transducers that are detecting several variables to which the microprocessor is interested must be selected through a multiplexer, and the time that passes, that expires from the present selection to the next one is given by the sum of all the time of the components that are present into the acquisition chain. And this, in practice, this sets the sampling frequency of that signal. The time base for this task can be provided by the real-time local clock if this time is sufficient for the desired sampling frequency. I'm talking about of tens millisecond order of magnitude. This is suitable for slow components, but clearly is not okay for fast components. So in this case, we need hardware timers for defining the real-time base. Another kind of temporization that must be taken into account by the microprocessor is the so-called delay temporization. That is, a command or a signal is enabled, is activated, but after a suitable delay that is used to wait the settling of the signals that must be used by the components, or conversely correspond to the output of an electronic component that must be read by the microprocessor. In this case, the typical order of magnitude is around 10-100 microseconds, so we need clearly or very fast software cycles or better hardware timers. And finally, the last task that can be executed by a microprocessor related to the temporization is the so-called timestamping, that is that activity associating a suitable instant of time to a particular activity or to a particular set of values that have been acquired. In this case, the typical hardware that is provided is a free running timer with a suitable duration that represents the frequency with which the events are upgraded, for example, tens, hundreds of microseconds. In slide 45, a typical example of a software acquisition cycle is shown. It is quite let's say understandable. There are no difficulties, but we feel the need to describe it with a few words because for sake of completeness, let's say. You see that this cycle is organized as four cycle that sweeps the number of the channels, the number of the transducer that we are acquiring, after waiting the end of the acquisition period, that is after waiting the suitable time that corresponds to the sampling frequency that has been set. The first operation is the output of the sample and hold circuit. So as the sample and hold is open, the gain of the amplifier is tuned to the right value, because clearly if we have a programmable amplifier, the gain for a certain channel cannot be considered valid for another channel, so we have to modify it. Pay attention to the fact that we have an array of gains that are different for every channel I that we are considering. Now we select the multiplexer, outmux, that is the right channel we want to acquire, and we wait for the commutation of that channel. This is a typical temporization in delay, just to let the settling time expires, and we output the command that hold that value on the capacitor of the sample and hold. So we could say that we are closing the sample and hold. We associate to this instant the right value of the timer, and we wait another small short interval of time to let the signal in output from the sample and hold settles well on a constant value, so as to be able to start the conversion, remaining in wait for the conclusion of the conversion itself. Then we associate another time stamping to this moment, and we wait for the end of the conversion, and finally we read the value of the ADC, associating it to the right location in the array of the acquired values. In the description of the acquisition chain, we mentioned the possibility of having a programmable gain operational amplifier. The need for such a kind of component is related to the relative error by which the measurement can be affected. Let's consider a set of concerns and issues about this problem. We can analyze the absolute error of measurement, and we can suppose that this error is constant. In slide 46, we have a first diagram that shows the ideal relationship between measurement of a variable and its real value. The ideal relationship, of course, is a line perfectly inclinated with 45 degrees with respect to the horizontal axis. But we know that due to several causes, the measurement, that is the representation internal to the machine of that real value, can be affected by error that can provide an overestimation of the acquired value or even an underestimation. This error can be caused by an offset that is present into the measurement instrumentation, or by the fixed point binary representation of the numbers. That is, this is the typical case into which the quantization error of the converter affects the representation internal to the machine. If we represent the weight of such a kind of constant error with respect to the real value of the measurement, we can use the picture, the diagram in the right part of slide 46, and we see that the influence of such a kind of error diminishes when the value of the variable that is acquired is big, and instead it is important when the value of this variable is small. We can define absolute error as the difference between the measured, represented internally to the machine value, and its real value VU. And we can represent the relative error of the same measurement as the ratio between the absolute error and the real value V, or the measured value M. What happens if the error relative is constant and the absolute error is not constant? The situation is represented in the picture in figure 47, where we see that the difference between the real value that has been acquired and the measurement obtained increases when the real value augments. Therefore, it is small for small values and big for great values. The relative error shown in the right part of the picture is constant, while the absolute error increases, augments, I mean. This is typically due to gain errors in the transfer function of the devices that characterize the acquisition chain, or, as you know, in the floating point number representation, because you remember that the quantization error, quantization binary error, affects also the exponent, and therefore is bigger when the exponent is big and is small when the exponent represents a small number. In this case, we can apply a suitable policy, because if a small quantization absolute error is required, when the magnitude of the signal to be measured is small, that is a relative error more or less constant, we can use a logarithmic amplifier. As an alternative, in particular when we can accept the relative costs, a programmable gain amplifier can be used so as to tune, to adapt the amplification provided to the range of the values to which the input signal belongs. The amplification will allow to provide to the converter a suitable input value that is in the high part of its range, so as to reduce the influence of the quantization error. Clearly, this is a useful approach when the input signal features wide variations, that is, it can be as small as high in a certain interval of time. But another requirement is that this variation is slow with respect to the sampling frequency. That is, if we have a peak in a very short time, probably even the change of the gain will not succeed in avoiding an error. But if the modification of the value of the signal will occur in an interval of time that is large compared to the short sampling period that is chosen, even this change can be detected, and the modification in the gain of the operational amplifier will allow to us to maintain the relative error into a, let's say, limited range as desired. The approach that allows to do this is called auto-range programming gain, or we talk in terms of auto-range operational amplifier. In the slide 49, a suitable algorithm is shown. First of all, we see a picture that shows three possible gains. The first is called max, the second average, and the second and the last one minimum. They correspond to the possible gains with which the considered operational amplifier can be programmed. The next step is to define the possible values of the input voltage to the operational amplifier in three levels, in three ranges that correspond to the three gains characterizing the operational amplifier itself. Therefore, we see an interval that is called high, an interval that is called normal, and an interval that is called low. In particular, we will define normal the interval of values for a particular selected gain, so as the ratio between the voltage that we are considering and the quantization error of, for example, the converter is in the range of the required one. That is, we see that the so-called normal interval has a maximum and a minimum value, and clearly we will have a relative error given by the specifics of the problem with a tolerance, that is a required error with a maximum and a minimum. The idea is that considering the quantization error and considering the maximum amplified value of the normal range and the minimum amplified value of the normal range, we will are in the tolerance range of the relative required error. Instead, if after the amplification the signal exceeds the maximum, let's say, tolerated value of the relative error, we will be in the high area. Otherwise, if after the amplification the relative error will fall below the minimum of the range of tolerance of the required tolerated error, we will say that we are in the so-called low area. In this case, the microprocessor is characterized by an algorithm that sets a new gain. In particular, you see in the slide that if the measurement after the amplification, of course, is below the lower threshold, a new gain will be set that will higher with respect to the next one. reasonably, if we are in the low area, we will modify the gain with the next step so as to verify if we are in the normal area. Otherwise, if the measurement is after, is greater than the threshold, the new gain will be obtained by considering the lower level in the gain list compared to the previous one. Otherwise, if we are in the right range, we keep the gain fixed. As you can see by the picture, this is the typical idea followed by the curves. You see, for example, that when we have the maximum gain, the normal arrives up to a certain threshold, after which we have the high label, the high definition, and in that case we modify the gain, getting down one step, so setting the gain to average, so as to fall into the so-called normal area for the same range of input values but with a lower gain. And the same happens in case if we are in the average gain but we fall in the high in terms of relative error area. In this case we set the gain to the minimum one so as to fall in the normal area for the minimum gain. Consider, however, the fact that there is a hysteresis effect due to the fact that we want to avoid a continuous commutation due, for example, to the noise or some disturbance effects. Look, for example, at the situation that causes a modification in the gain from the maximum one to the average one. The threshold that causes this is when the input signal augments overcoming a suitable threshold. In that case the gain, let's say, gets down one level. Now let's consider the interval of input values into which, when the gain is average, it is necessary to increase the gain one step. You see that the threshold between the low area and the normal area is not the same one, we considered before relative to the maximum gain for diminishing the gain. Instead, this threshold is a little lower than the previous one, and this is due to the fact that we want to assure a certain, let's say, tolerance interval in terms of sensibility to the noise. In other words, when we need to increase the gain, we fix a threshold relatively lower than the other one, just to include in this difference the possible, let's say, variation due to the presence of the noise on the signal that we are considering. Conversely, when we diminish the gain from the highest one to the average, to the medium one, the threshold is a little bit higher than the one that causes the opposite variation, again to include possible variations due to the noise that otherwise, if not considered, could cause the continuous commutation of the gain, basically making the acquisition procedure affected by a overhead time that is due in practice only to the noise itself. The same considerations can be done when we modify the gain from the medium one to the minimum one and vice versa. Again, we have a small hysteresis area that absorbs those modifications into the input signal that are due to the external disturbances. Of course, the software running into the microprocessor should register the gain that has been chosen and should adopt the corresponding conversion curve to reproduce the measurement from the value that has been converted by the ADC after the amplification, and of course to reconstruct the original physical magnitude that it acquired.